CSI in the World. I'm John Batchelor. Between October 17th, 2023 and February 4th, 2024, Iran's surrogates, proxies, attacked U.S. forces, I learned from a new piece posted by Bradley Bowman, along with his colleagues at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracy. I mentioned Cameron McMillan. Between those dates, there were 165 attacks on U.S. personnel stationed anti-ISIS in Syria, Jordan, and Iraq, a tri-border area. 165 attacks leading to casualties, leading to deaths. Brad, a very good evening to you. This is an important fact for the conflict throughout the whole Middle East. What does this mean to us now, those 165 attacks? And what does it mean given the threat environment we're living with because of the Iranian claim that they're going to retaliate for the death of one of their commanders in Damascus? Good evening to you.
John, good evening to you, and thanks for the opportunity to talk about this piece that I published yesterday at FDD's Long War Journal with my colleague, Cameron McMillan. You know, as a lot of your listeners will know, on April 1st, the Israelis conducted an airstrike on a building adjacent to the Iranian embassy in Damascus and killed about seven people, including the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps Quds Force commander, responsible, among other things, for smuggling weapons to Lebanon. And of course, we've seen more than about 3,100 rockets launched by Lebanese Hezbollah into Israel since October 7th in near daily attacks. So this attack is significant because it's arguably the most significant killing of an Iranian IRGC leader since the U.S. killing of Qasem Soleimani. But this time it was done by the Israelis. So following that, the Iranian foreign minister is basically saying, hey, we hold America responsible and that we're going to respond. And so he's suggesting that they may resume their attacks on U.S. forces. So the main policy point that we're making in this piece is looking at history, both the tanker war in the 1980s, looking at a study we did last year on Iran maritime aggression from 2021 to 2023, and tracking the data of what happened during that time period you mentioned, October 17th to February 4th, the pattern is clear. When we get hit in the face 165 times, we, the United States, and our four deployed forces standing between us and those that want to kill us, and you only respond nine times, anyone on a playground knows you're simply inviting more of the same. And throughout that time period, I and others was warning, John, if we didn't impose greater consequences on the Iranians and the Iranian-backed terrorist organizations, we are going to see people die. And unfortunately, that's exactly what happened at Tower 22 in Jordan, where three U.S. service members were killed. So what did the United States do? After waiting, you know, 165 attacks weren't enough for us to take forceful action. We had to have Americans killed. And when they were killed, we responded forcefully with 85 targets in Iraq and Syria. And then less than a week later, we killed the Kaitab Hezbollah commander responsible for attacks on U.S. forces drone strikes. What happened after that, John? What happened after the United States finally said enough's enough and took forceful action? We haven't seen any attacks, John, according to the Pentagon recently, a day or so ago, on U.S. forces in Iraq, Syria, Jordan, since February 4th. So, I mean, it's just for anyone not paying attention to history or to current events who doesn't know, there's a theme here. When Iran is confronted with the resolute, determined, confident application of American power, they back down. When we're weak, it's destabilizing and it simply invites more aggression. So if we're going to, I believe we need to retain U.S. forces in Iraq and Syria, but I have an old fashioned idea. If we're going to take our husbands, wives, sons, daughters, and neighbors and send them to harm's way, make sure they have the means to defend themselves and the political permission to hit back hard so our adversaries regret their aggression. And when we don't do that, John, people get killed and they die. And then that's not conjecture. If you look at the January 2020 incident where they launched more than a dozen, Iran launched more than a dozen ballistic missiles at two U.S. bases in northern Iraq. We had no ballistic air missile defense systems in the area. So our troops simply had to run for cover and wait for impact. And more than 100 had traumatic brain injuries as a result. So this is urgent. I want to make sure they have the means to defend themselves and the political permission to hit back hard when these attacks come.
Brad makes a very detailed version of Chicago Rule, Sean Connery's speech from The Untouchables. He brings a knife. You bring a gun. Okay. What gun do we need? Brad, what do they need out there that they don't have right now?
You know, it's funny you should ask that, because you'd expect at our Center on Military and Political Power, FDD, we don't just make broad sweeping policy statements, we try to back it up with details like we did with the 165 and the 9. And anyone interested in this can go to our website and actually see the graph where we track these over time. And we stopped doing it in the last few weeks because it's been thankfully flat. But I'm worried that the attacks are going to be coming again shortly, both against Israel and the United States. When I'm talking to sources, I'm hearing that we're in a better position now than we were earlier this year when those four Americans were killed in Jordan at Tower 22. But I'm still hearing that there's insufficient defenses against rockets, mortars, and maybe some missiles, particularly rockets and mortars. There's a system called the Coyote system that's very helpful. I'm hearing that we don't have enough. And so people, cynical people in Washington, far from danger, will criticize me and say, hey, Brad, don't you know, we can never have enough air missile defense, so we just got to make do. Well, you know, that's usually come from someone that's never been in harm's way. I'm not willing to accept that. If you're going to send them there into harm's way, give them the means to defend themselves. And very well-sourced people that I'm talking to as recently as the last 24 hours telling me there's still insufficient air missile defense to protect against drones, which are an increasing problem, rockets, and missiles.
Yes, the drone defense, that has become the magic button in the war in Ukraine. And I've been reading now and again, the military, all services working on drone detection, counter-drone activity, even devoting whole units to it. Is that available now, Brad, or is it still an experimental stage?
No, we have counter-drone capabilities. But John, as you know, and many of your listeners may know, the hardest part with drones is often detecting them, right? Once you see them, with slow moving drones, they're fairly easy to disable or destroy. The trick often is seeing them for a variety of reasons. They fly low, they fly at a different speed, different altitude, they have different signatures, so difficult to detect. That's the first step. You can't kill that which you do not see, so you have to detect it first and then shoot it down. But just having a bunker that can people run to if they happen to have enough warning, I'm sorry, is just not acceptable. And we have too many troops in harm's way that don't have both the detection and interdiction capabilities they need to protect themselves and accomplish their mission.
Another version of defense is to make it clear to the enemy that you will respond and escalate. Have we seen that in any instance, or is it going to be a surprise to the Iranians?
Yeah, no, it's exactly what I just said. You know, after those 165 attacks on our forces and only 9 responses, despite warnings, we continue to just give them slap on the wrist. When we finally responded with strength, with the 85 targets across Iraq and Syria, and then killing the Khattab Hezbollah commander about a little less than a week later, John, we've had no attacks on U.S. forces since then. I'm not saying that the Islamic Republic of Iran are suddenly turned Amish or anything like that. This is not a forever thing. Deterrence, to your implicit point, erodes. It has to be maintained. But John, here's the key point for the wonks out there. There's two kinds of deterrence. There's deterrence by denial, you convincing your adversary they can't accomplish the specific thing they're trying to do, aka hit the target, and deterrence by punishment. That is, okay, maybe you can do it, but we're going to deliver such a counterpunch, you're going to rue the day you were born. You need both of those to have deterrence to be strong against our adversaries.
Bradley Bowman, Senior Director, Center on Military and Political Power at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, writing with his colleague Cameron McMillan. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.